Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Spelled by Betsy Shao. Narrated by Ariel Delisle. 1. Dragon Slaying for Dummies. Rule number 17. To rescue a princess from magical imprisonment, a handsome prince must first slay the dragon. If one is not available, a large iguana will do in a pinch. Definitive Fairy Tale Survival Guide, Volume 1. Stupid princes, I muttered as I stalked down the green-flecked quartz and marble hallway. Why is it that when I don't want them, they're practically popping out of the closets? But the one time I actually need a knight in overpriced armor, they're nowhere to be found. I checked the guidebook in my hand one last time to make sure I hadn't missed anything. My plan was perfect. So brilliant, in fact, that I was amazed none of my other ancestors had thought of it. The fact that it took me 17 years to come up with it was moot. For once, I was grateful that the world of fairy tales and magic adhered to such strict rules. Still, the entire thing hinged on finding a single prince willing to help me end my lifetime of house arrest in the Emerald Palace. So far, I'd searched through the North and West Towers, the Potions Pantry, the Arcane Arcade, and the Armory. Next, I tried the main floor. On my way down the curved staircase, I had a perfect view of the one and only entrance to the palace. The double doors were made of ironwood cut from Sherwood Forest and large enough to accommodate visiting giants. Sunlight filtered through the ornate and impenetrable stained glass side panels, casting a shimmery green and gold hue on my skin. Before I reached the bottom step, the doors slid open with a whoosh. For a minute, I hoped the new arrival was one of the palace's visiting princes. Unfortunately, it was just UPS, United Pegasus Service. Even worse, since I hadn't ordered anything for a few days, the delivery wasn't for me. I waved one of the postal brownies over. "What's in the crate?" He gave a sharp whistle, and the worker set down the box, with the arrow saying, "This side up," pointing to the ground. To tell the truth, I didn't care about the contents, but it kept them busy while the double doors remained wide open. Maybe I wouldn't need a prince after all. While the brownies unpacked, I slipped past them and headed to the one and only palace exit. As soon as I was within 5 feet of it, the door slid closed with a clap. That's the problem with auto magic doors. They know who to let in and who not to let out. "Sign here, please." The boss brownie either didn't notice or care about my experiment with the door. Without looking at me, he held out a quill and a parchment saying I'd received the goods undamaged, though I had no clue what it was to start with. Some sort of ornate gold stand with filigree chains coming out of the center. About a dozen little glass balls hung at the end of the chains. Those seemed to be intact, so I signed and shooed the brownies to the ballroom. Even from a room away, I could hear Queen M, my mother, directing the servants in their preparations for tonight's holiday festivities. She commanded her battalion of party planners like a general on the battlefield, even setting up a triage corner to treat the wounded. Imagine the number of paper cuts from folding thousands of star ornaments to hang on the story spruce. Year after year, I took part in the Muse Day tradition, just like everybody else. I wrote my wishes on the foil stars, hoping the story makers above would hear my prayers and make them come true. It hadn't happened yet. Obviously, as a princess, I would get my happy ending, but the makers were taking their sweet time getting around to it, and I was tired of waiting. Movement in the courtyard caught my eye. Still on the prince hunt, I went over to investigate, taking great pains to stay out of view of my mother. A man stood on a ladder, waving a net frantically back and forth. Though he had a bit of a tummy that hung over his belt, he used to be a handsome prince. Now he was just my father, King Henry. "What in Grimm's name are you doing, Dad?" I hurried over to stabilize the ladder as it started tipping over.
"Language, pumpkin," he chided and wobbled down the ladder. "And a merry Muse Day to you, too. Your mother sent me to gather will-o'-the-wisps for the new chandelier. I'd forgotten how tricky they were to hunt. I believe I prefer trolls."
So that's what the package was.
The globes were to contain the will-o'-the-wisp's light, while the chains were to keep them from getting loose. It was a smart idea after last year's glowworm fiasco. Some of my heels still had glow gook on the bottoms. Humming beeswax candles would be easier, except every heroine has her Achilles curse. Apples for Snow White, spinning wheels for Sleeping Beauty, and fire for the House of Emerald. Our family became spelled after my ancestor pixed off two evil witch sisters. The witch's curse was supposed to doom my great-great-great-grandmother to turn evil and torch the world, except the spell wasn't worded right. It didn't specify which Emerald Princess. So ever since, all the girls in the Emerald family have been stuck inside, since there's no way to know what generation will inherit the curse. Until we know for sure who the unlucky royal is, candles, lava lanterns, and anything with a flame is banned to keep the palace safe. As for the outside world, well, if you aren't allowed out, you don't have to worry about it. Completely lame that I have to suffer because one princess couldn't mind her own glammed business. Well, suffered. Past tense, if everything goes as planned. Father, any chance you've seen a prince lying about? I seem to have misplaced them all.
Well, which one are you looking for? Your date to the ball, perhaps?
He leaned in close and whispered conspiratorially.
I bet it's Hudson, right?
Hudson was the half-giant prince and Dad's favorite of all the suitors he and Mother recently infested the palace with. Dad probably figured Hudson would make a very good hunting companion, given he was fierce-looking and around the size of a boulder. Unfortunately, he also had the IQ of granite. With a dreamy look, Father put a hand around my shoulder.
Ah, I remember when your mother finally accepted my suit. It took more time and patience than getting Cerberus to fetch. That's the thing about love. The best kind isn't easy or instant, and you often get roughed up a bit on the way.
He winked at me.
But I suppose you know a thing or two about love yourself now.
What in spell are you talking about? I sighed, tired of the little talks, not to mention the entire Game of Thrones and accompanying Prince Parade. I'd rather date Quasimodo than any of those royal rejects. I just need one of them for a little project I'm working on. Father exhaled heavily and crossed his arms.
I'm guessing I don't want to know. That way I can't get yelled at by your mother for not stopping you.
I smiled and tapped my nose, indicating he was right. Neither of us had illusions about who wore the biggest crown in the family.
I think I saw Sterling earlier in the Hall of Mirrors,
Father said, and climbed back onto the ladder. I groaned internally because, one, I'd missed such an obvious spot. Sterling was hardly ever without his entourage of stylists and personal mirror holders. And two, finding him meant I had to deal with his ego, which was so large I was constantly amazed he didn't pop his armor wide open. Thanks, I said, heading off for the South Tower.
Dorothea,
my father called after me.
Try to remember it's a holiday and have a little fun tonight with your friends.
Sure, I waved, not bothering to paste on a fake smile since he couldn't see me. Though all the major fairy tale families were coming tonight, I wouldn't exactly call any of them friends. Aside from the once-a-year gathering, I never spoke to any of them, except the occasional chat on Flitter with Cinderella, since we shared a love of designer footwear. All the other princesses were too busy, wrapped up in their own adventures, to distract me from my lack of them. I found Sterling exactly where Dad said he'd be, flexing his muscles and making duck lips at one of his 50 reflections.
Princess, you look as stunning as ever. To what do I owe this immense pleasure?
He gave a half bow, and I couldn't help but notice that his eyes were still darting to his own reflection. He was generically dashing, but unremarkable from a lineup of a dozen other princes. Still, he fit the bill. Royal and handsome. And boy, did he know it, with a sword hanging from a sheath around his waist. I have something that I desperately need help with. I would be ever so grateful if you would loan me the services of your sword arm. I purposefully made the request formal, so he would be less likely to refuse.
Of course, dearest of my heart. What manly task may I perform for you?
If you care for me at all, you'll slay a dragon.
Such a simple task to prove my devotion? For you, I will gladly take up this quest. Why, by the age of 10, I had already felled my first ogre.
I spun around on my satin ballet flats and started walking, so Sterling wouldn't see me gagging as he recounted his nightly resume for the rest of the trip through the tower's maze of spiral staircases until we reached our destination. Here we are. Go get him. I gave Sterling a little push toward the waist-high mother-of-pearl column situated in the alcove between the grand staircase and the entrance.
That?
He asked incredulously, pointing the tip of his sword at the object resting on the column. That was a very detailed dragon sculpture, carved painstakingly out of the highest quality emerald. The statuette was approximately 18 crown lengths across, and as high as my arm, from elbow to fingertip.
Breaking an antique is hardly a fitting feat for a knight such as I.
He went over and poked the emerald dragon with his finger.
Don't you have anything bigger? Perhaps something along the lines of a great beast?
I shook my head fervently. Nope, it has to be this. Though it wasn't exactly what the guidebook intended, I didn't even have access to the village pet shop, so the dragon work of art would have to do. Sterling sighed.
As my lady wishes.
Hoisting his broadsword into the air, he sliced down, hitting the statue with a great reverberating crack. The noise filled the palace, much louder than it should have for the small chunk of glittering green that broke off from the dragon's spine. The statue shuddered, lifted its head, and roared. 2. When statues attack. The rule of apology. Being royal means never having to say you're sorry. Thomason's tips to ruthless ruling. Sterling dropped his sword and shrieked like a milkmaid, running behind me.
It's alive! Why is it alive?
I tried to yank the prince forward. Quit being a puss in boots. There's your beast. Hurry and get it. Sterling steadfastly refused to move from his cover, while the dragon hopped off his pedestal and started advancing. I was about to grab Sterling's sword for myself when the creature stopped, rolled to the side, and started wailing.
I've been wounded.
Its cries echoed throughout the grand foyer.
All these years of faithful protection, and I am betrayed, stabbed in the back.
The poor thing thrashed around as if in death throes, its hollering pitiful and loud. And if it didn't shut its snout, it was going to get me in trouble. I crouched down beside it, retrieving the missing chunk in the process.
Shh, shh. It's no big deal. I can fix it. No need to be upset.
I spoke in soothing tones and tried putting the piece back in, hoping the magic that brought it to life would put it back to sleep once it was whole. The chunk clattered to the floor the moment I let go.
Farewell, these mortal coils.
The dragon gave one last exhale and lay still.
Oh, Mortimer, don't get your scales in a bunch. It's just a chip.
Between the wailing and shushing, I hadn't heard anyone approach. The emerald sorceress's gnarled green finger, complete with razor-sharp red-tipped nails, poked me under my chin, forcing me up until I stared at her warty nose. The single, wiry hair sticking out of the wart twitched, a signal I've come to interpret as meaning, "You're pixed." Verte was the kingdom's head sorceress, oracle, palace grump, and the only reason I hadn't died of sheer boredom. We were often partners in mischief, unless I was messing with her stuff, and then I was on my own. One time, I blew up her cauldron trying to make soup. In retaliation, she sent me a billy goat that ate my entire closet's contents. Mortimer, the carved emerald dragon, shook his scales and sprang up to his claws, scurrying into Verte's arms. While she was cooing and stroking him like a cat, I took the opportunity to try and sneak away. Just beyond the still cowering Sterling, the entrance to the palace stood slightly ajar, even though I was less than 3 feet away. It had worked, sort of. As I inched closer, the door remained frozen, but I could almost feel it wanting to shut, like it too was alive. The opening was small, but maybe if I sucked in and shimmied sideways...
Dorothea Gale Emerald, do not take a single step outside that door.
Mortimer's caterwauling had drawn more than just Verte. The commotion had also caught the attention of my mother. She stood tall, proud, and stone-faced at the archway between the ballroom and the foyer. Every inch of her looked regal, from her sweeping velvet dress to her brown hair braided back into a severe bun. My father stood behind her, and the servants she'd been directing poked their heads around the archway wall. At a noticeably safe distance, caught red-handed, with a large audience no less, there was no use pretending it didn't look like exactly what it was. Time to use the skills that every proper princess was born with. Begging, pleading, and whining until I got my way.
Please, 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 please. I'll do anything you want if you let me outside for just a little while.
My mother's eyes narrowed and her chin squared into an even harder line.
And what of the curse? Have you forgotten?
Or perhaps you think we stay inside to avoid grass allergies.
I folded my arms, refusing to budge. Seriously, has anyone ever thought about the shelf life of this thing? That spell is as ancient as Verte and probably past its expiration date. The elemental hags are probably dead, so maybe their magic died with them. No one said anything for a few beats, so I continued, determined to win my cause. I promise I will be really careful and not play with matches and only go into stores that use glow crystals. My father, ever compassionate, stepped in to help plead my case.
Perhaps just a few minutes with an escort wouldn't...
Mother cut him off with a withering glare. Henry, I believe you have other things to attend to. In my head, I imagined the crack of a whip as my father's shoulders slumped and he went back to catching will-o'-the-wisps in the courtyard. Mother's eye softened a little as she walked toward me.
I'm not purposely being cruel. This is the story the Makers have given us. Were it just the possibility of an endless sleep, I might consider breaking the rules. But it's more. Girl of Emerald, no man can tame. Burn down the world, consumed by flames.
She placed a gentle hand on my cheek.
Can you really risk the lives of our people on a few maybes?
Anger and sadness filled her voice. After all, she was bound by the curse too. And that's exactly why she should understand how I felt.
But can't you see I won't be risking anyone?
I started to explain my brilliant backup safety plan, which included half a dozen servants with water buckets. My words withered and died in my throat as her eyes turned steely again.
You have already put us all at risk by breaking the dragon and thus the protection spell cast over this entire palace.
Before she turned away, I saw her unmistakable and familiar look of disappointment. Oops, didn't quite seem sufficient. But how was I supposed to know the dumb carving actually did something useful besides looking sparkly?
Sterling,
my mother snapped sharply. The prince immediately stopped cowering and stood at attention.
As a favor to the throne, would you please stand guard at the door? With the barrier broken, now we must watch both what comes in and what goes out.
Sterling bowed, going on and on about his guarding pedigree as my mother walked away without giving me another look. I gave Sterling a thorough evaluation. Yeah, I could take him. But then he'd scream and the guards would have my nose in the dirt before I made it past the carriageway. But now I knew it was possible. I would just have to wait for my chance. Almost as if the little dragon could hear me plotting against him, he stirred again and pulled his shortened foreclaw to his head in a melodramatic gesture.
I feel myself slipping away. Is that a light I see?
Verte bopped him on the snout and ambled away.
Be quiet, you ninny, or I'll turn you into a pair of earrings.
Her voice faded down the hall. Most of the crowd had dispersed. The final few stragglers looked at me with the all-too-common look of fear mixed with trepidation. Pix 'em. They were just servants. It wasn't like their opinion mattered. Only one remained, watching me with open curiosity. He looked to be in his late teens or was magically enhanced to appear so. He could have been 100 for all I know. I'd never seen him before in my life. He was handsome enough, for a commoner, even in his worn leather pants and cracked work boots. A foreigner, his hair was unruly and dark auburn, which complemented his tanned but dirt-smudged complexion, though the tall, dark stranger vibe was ruined by his piercing pale blue eyes. Well, I'd had enough of being a sideshow for the day.
If you're the new gardener, the hedges are overgrown and in need of a trim.
I pointed in the direction of my father.
While you're there, you can help the king with the wisps.
The young man's expression clouded over, but he didn't move. I stamped my foot and pointed more forcefully.
Off with you. Courtyard's that way. Be sure to clean those awful boots before coming back in.
Someone told me I'd find a princess of great worth here, one with the strength to be the hero this realm needs.
He stared at me with those unsettling blue eyes. They were cold, like ice water, made me shiver from head to toe. Then his gaze seemed to search even deeper. Finally, he looked through me, like I was nothing. In brisk steps, he strode across the marble to the courtyard. But before crossing the threshold, he turned back to glare at me with his lip curled ever so slightly.
It seems she was mistaken.
Just like that, I had been sifted, weighed, and found wanting. I felt my own lip curl in response.
How rude! Who the grim was this peasant to judge me?
I was wearing a Glenda original.
Original!
Not some fairy godmother knockoff worn by those servant girls turned royal. I was a crown princess, for the love of fairy, and no one dismissed me. Before I could put the boy in his place, down in the dirt where he belonged, a clatter came from behind, making me nearly jump out of my shoes. I checked and was relieved that Sterling had simply dropped his sword. By the time I looked back, the gardener was gone. After stowing his blade, Sterling held up his shield, not in defense of the entrance, but so he could look at his reflection.
Clearly he's blind and doesn't know what he's talking about.
I didn't ask for Sterling's opinion, but it made me feel better. Until he opened his mouth again.
Worth. Pfft. I mean, look around at all the jewels. Your palace has everything you could ever want. Honestly, I don't know what you're fussing about. Why would anyone want to leave?
Because a cage is still a cage, no matter how big or glittering the bars are. And I would find a way free, no matter the cost. 3. When you hex upon a star. Rule number 43. Beware of strangers bearing gifts, especially little old ladies and cute kids. Definitive Fairy Tale Survival Guide, Volume 1. Even though I was in trouble, Princess Protocol required me to attend the ball. Nobody said I had to be on time, though. Since I arrived fashionably late, the celebration was already in full swing. Everyone had dressed in their finest, myself included. I'd used my Story Express card to buy a gown and matching cardigan shrug spun from platinum. It was softer than silkworm wings. Best of all, it was self-sizing, so the dress would fit the same before and after I made the rounds at the buffet. The couture fashion was a one-of-a-kind and practically cost my firstborn, but it was totally worth it. But as usual, the shoes really completed the look. Limited edition silver Hans Christian Louboutin slippers, with crushed rubies covering the sole and 2-inch heel. They'd been a Muse Day gift from Verte and made my feet tingle with happiness. Very few things in the world couldn't be fixed with a new pair of shoes. Unfortunately, My mother's ire was one of those unfixable things. I hurried past the base of the dais, hoping my parents wouldn't notice my late arrival. They did, but, as usual, were too busy greeting royals and dignitaries to make time for me. For once, I didn't mind, though. Between the dragon incident and now, my mother had sent 3 page boys to fetch me, each servant more insistent than the last. I'd ignored them all, pretending to be asleep when they had yelled through my door. Whatever mother wanted to talk about, I guarantee I didn't want to hear it. On my way to the center of the room, I waved at Rapunzel, one of the few princesses who wasn't half bad. After all, she was a former shut-in herself. She didn't notice me, since she was busy untangling her hair from some pugnacious lady's mountain of eclairs. Above them, the will-o'-the-wisps tried to get away in their crystal walls, but the gold chains held them tethered around the wisps' middles. Their agitated fluttering made the light shimmy and sparkle around the room. In particular, the wisps' glow bounced off the foil ornaments, making the story spruce look like it had been dusted with glitter. I couldn't help but be drawn to it, and reached for one of the twinkling stars. The smell of incense overpowered the tree's wintry scent as a deep male voice whispered in my ear.
"You don't need one of those to make your dreams come true."
I pivoted sharply on my heels and somehow ended up in a stranger's arms. "Pardon me," I demurred politely and tried to take a step back. When his arm stayed firm, I said, "I'm steady. You can let go now." After that didn't work, I threw princess niceties aside with a "get off" and pushed him away. I didn't get very far.
"A beautiful jewel such as yourself shouldn't be alone in a corner. Dance with me and shine."
The anonymous Prince Smarming didn't wait for permission before twirling me onto the dance floor in time to the music. Other girls around us swooned with dreamy expressions, like they too hoped to be swept off their feet. Understandable, since the grabby stranger looked pretty good. Okay, who was I kidding? He was gorgeous in his finely tailored suit that even I couldn't find fault with. His golden hair somehow seemed windswept, even without a breeze. And when he smiled, his sapphire blue eyes twinkled, and his cheeks had dimples big enough to keep your gems in. I still wasn't interested. Though I'd never met the man before, I'd met his scent. Ever since my parents started playing matchmaker, I'd received an avalanche of love letters all doused with the same noxious sandalwood and rose cologne. After the first 100, I asked Father to make the hounds guard my window to scare off the carrier doves. I vaguely remembered the guy's name, but mostly I thought of him as Stalker.
"Look, McWiz, or something, I'm flattered you made the connection, even though I've been unable to introduce myself in person until now. However, the name is Mick, the Magnificent Wizard of..."
"It doesn't really matter," I interrupted. "For one, you're way too old for me. And since you're not a prince, you're not eligible to be a suitor anyway. So you can stop with the creepy fan mail." A quick frown marred Mick's face before reversing. He blinded me with his pearly whites.
"That was rather rude for a lady, but I'll forgive it this time, since I've a keen interest in you, young Dorothea of Emerald."
"That's nice," I said sarcastically and yanked on my hand, but the action only seemed to make him hold me tighter.
"You remind me of someone I used to know."
"Good, then go dance with her."
"That's not possible."
He faltered on the 3 count of the waltz.
"I made a mistake and let her slip through my fingers."
History was about to repeat itself. Mick's clinginess made it that much easier to, accidentally, step on his shiny, gold-colored shoes. Hard. While he gasped and reached for his injured foot, I slipped away and out the ballroom doors into the courtyard. I found a quiet place in the very back of the gardens, among the agave lilies and a few wisps that Dad seemed to have missed. The lilies were my favorite flowers, even though the blossoms came from a prickly cactus. Unfortunately, their beauty was marred because all of the nearby topiaries were so overgrown that the lion more closely resembled a hedge hippo than the lean and ferocious king of beasts. Apparently, the gardener was not only rude, but also horrible at his job. I wandered over to take a closer look and catalog all his mistakes. I'd already started a mental tally of all his faults, so that next time he crossed my path, I'd be prepared to return his previous insult.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?